And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
How do you feel about Gather Round, Andy?
Well, it went from a slightly dodgy idea that the AFL had copied off the NRL and tried to sell to the New South Wales government and failed, to the world's biggest success ever because they sold out 5,000 seat stadiums.
I know. And then sold out an Adelaide game that they would have sold out otherwise. Yeah, and it was such... I mean, because obviously nobody would ever go to Adelaide as a tourist destination anyway, so that they need to hold rounds like this in the middle of the school holidays when their hotels would otherwise be empty.
Yeah, look, we could go into the economics of government expenditure on sport in another podcast, but suffice to say we probably would be warmer towards it had we won.
Yeah, that's probably the case. I thought it was fine. I probably don't feel as enthusiastic about it now that they've said that instead of being a rotating event that it's locked in for 3 years in South Australia. I do. I think there's a chance that it might overstay its welcome, but yeah, you're probably right that I would feel more positive about it if you know, we'd stormed home in the last quarter instead of whatever it was that we did.
Yeah, and look, I wanted to raise a broader issue. I must admit, this year, we'll have lots of positive stuff, because if you want to read negative stuff about Richmond, you can go to the media and there's umpteen billion stories.
No, all the usual suspects are out of the woodwork.
All the usual suspects, but, you know, a lot of the intelligent mainstream media is kicking us too, which is, you know, in some ways justified. But just as a fan, I've been very anxious before games for this season, because we've just got, as discussed many times, we've got a lot of guys, you know, very close to the end. And it's either going to happen this year or it's going to happen next. You know, the odd one will retire before his time like Dave did. But it's just really no one wants to see, you don't want to see the game where you realize that person you've loved and has been so much of your life for over a decade is that the end has come. And every game we lose, and we've all been playing good teams, it's just, you can see that with a few players, and it was obviously on show with one of our champions on the weekend. But it feels like there's a lot at stake in these games, more so than a regular season game emotionally, because, you know, we've all had favourites retire before, but we've never had this greatest team we've had in our lives and maybe the greatest team we'll ever see. I get quite anxious watching these games as a fan. There's things really? More so than, I mean, 2016 was, like, there's so much happiness from this team, and obviously it's a different vibe. It's not despair and hopelessness, but it's a completely different vibe, as we discussed many times, but there's things happening that, and Dimmel was very good about, and it's not just Cochin that, you know, that some of the other guys had good games, but Cochin been subbed out at halftime, and his AFL rating at that stage was just, yeah, it speaks for itself, but it's no one wants to see it, right?
No, I've been of the view that, you know, he's still serviceable as a midfielder, but yeah, that wasn't a great game. It was speaking of how aged veterans, it was nice to get something of a vintage performance from Jack.
Yeah, sadly, I tweeted before the game, and I was hoping for a renaissance of Jack, which we actually got. Sadly, that amazingly didn't go viral, that particular tweet. But yeah, like you could almost see it coming, couldn't you? Jack got the week off, had a fresh body, often does well in those situations. Was going to get a, he was going to get targeted. Like that would have been really grim if that hadn't come off, but it did happen, and it, that was lovely. It's sort of
yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, even if this is Jack's last year, that it was just it was lovely to see. And of course, he took the big head knock. Was you know had the slow motion running off, had, bloodied. If we'd won that game, you know, if a lot of the other teammates had played as well as he did and we won that game, like that would have been sort of in the Jack Pantheon, the huge Jack Pantheon of legendary games. That would have been right up there.
I know. It is a real, it's such a funny team. The new recruits in the midfield, Dan Rioli's having clearly, his best season after having his best season last year. Liam Baker's taken enough up another level. There's a whole swathe of youngsters with all the inconsistency with that comes with that. You sort of and these aged veterans. It's a funny old team.
Yeah, actually, I've gone through some of the numbers. So I was going to bring this up later after we sort of talked about the Swans game, but which we're obviously both desperately keen not to talk about.
I'm okay to talk about it around it a while.
But by the way, we should just say apologies for no pod last week. It was for personal reasons, not because we were grumpy and upset. But Nick,
don't it's the brander. It was all my fault. I was on the other side of the world, and I didn't have access. I couldn't watch the game.
Yeah, fair enough. But Nick, this is the double reason why I can be grumpy, extremely grumpy, because there is something about this team that is challenging my core beliefs. We are number two in the AFL for hit-out differential.
Ooh, and we're not very good.
And we are 18th in centre clearances. And not only that, we're 18th by a reasonable margin. We are 18th by a much, considerable, it's not huge numbers, it's minus four games. I don't want to over-exaggerate. But the best team is only plus three. Like, we are an outlier in how bad we are. Now, hit-outs is not the same as centre-square hit-outs, but you would think there would be some correlation. But more broadly, this is not a Richmond team in its numbers. Obviously we've been losing, we've been playing good teams, so you wouldn't expect them to be great. But, we're bad in some of the things we've been bad in, traditional contested possessions, but we're bad in things like, obviously we've got a bad inside 50 differential. Our metres gained is bad relative to the other team. We're turning the ball over. We're terrible on ground ball gets. And we're second to hit.
I think particularly in the forward 50.
Yeah, I don't have access to that public stat, but that was just an everywhere stat. But yeah, it's just all the systemic stats are just, they're not good. And yet we're good at the hit-outs, which is very frustrating.
Yeah. How did you find the young ruck combination? I feel like we've gone a surprisingly long time before talking about it.
Well, I'm in a very... On Ryan, obviously, lots of discussion, and on the weekend we basically drew the hit-outs and hit-outs to advantage, so we batted a draw and then managed to lose the game elsewhere. So there's two models of the way looking at Samson Ryan. I think with this, I was just reflecting on Samson Ryan today, is this is why drafting is hard and why even people who do it all the time tend to, it's really hard to establish an advantage. That Samson Ryan dropped mark where Papley swooped in for goal. I'll come to some good stuff about Samson Ryan, but there was a couple of times where he showed really bad hands. Now, there's two takes to that. Like, just I'm just taking two simplistic, extreme versions of what that could mean. And I must admit, I didn't think of this comparison, and thank you to the person who did. Like, one of it is the Benny Gale comparison, who, you know, you might remember had hands of stone when he was young, often, and the ball would bounce off.
At times. Sometimes he was good. Yeah.
But the ball
was inconsistent.
Yeah, and the ball would often, he'd often get to the right spot and then he'd drop the ball. But as he got older and older and he got stronger in the body, more and more he'd take it. And so it may be a fixable problem. And the other one is the Gus Graham comparison where, you know, what ultimately did him in with the Richmond career is he couldn't rely on him. You know, he was an okay tap ruckman. He wasn't great in possession, but you couldn't, the thing that really sort of, you know, if you put the lighter tester on the coaches, dropping back in the flight in the fourth quarter in the back line, you couldn't rely on him to take the mark. So what's Sampson going to go from here?
No, he had pretty clingy hands. Look, Sampson, he's never been an overwhelming mark in the VFL, but he's often been good. Yeah, so it's definitely something he can do. I don't know. Doing it at senior level is obviously a big step up, and he is still very much a baby in his career. I thought he had some nice moments as a tap ruckman. You know, he was up against Laddams, who's, you know, clearly much more of a mature body than he is. I thought that was something to work with.
Yeah, so to support your point, the positive side, by the way, that Papley goal, I felt for him so much after that. Had it been a closer game, like, he would be waking up when he's 55 remembering that moment and cringing. That's a 2 a.m. sleepless moment. So that was my first reaction to that. So I really felt for him. But
and at some point, I flashed, oh, my God, I'm so glad that they couldn't organise a trade with Carlton. can you imagine how annoying Tom Papley would be playing for Carlton?
Oh my! Like, the rewatching the game, like, he was even better than you remember him to be. Like, it was obscene. Anyway, So Sampson Ryan, he's still okay. A lot of this came against second rucks, but even after a full game of first rucking, he is still in the top few in the AFL for hitouts percentage one. So he is rucking well, as you've noted before. And his hitouts to advantage rate is fine. And second to that, if you have the stomach, go rewatch the highlights. Watch how Sampson Ryan's forward ball movement set up two of our goals in. Like, one of the kick maybe some other ruckman would have made, but it was definitely a hand pass that was well above average for what you expect your ruckman to do. So there's some ball movement skills there that are really special, and if he can hold up in the ruck, there's definitely pieces there. But, you know, if he doesn't start taking...
Wasn't there a nice tap for Judson's goal?
Oh, yes. I watched that three or four times, and it looks absolutely beautiful, but it almost looks too good, like he wasn't aiming there. Yes, it potentially was a very good tap. So there's lots of things there, but, you know, if you can't start holding those marks in the back line, it's all in vain. But there's heaps of tools there. So I'm like, one silver lining to the very depressing Nank injury, because Nank was having a really good season, was that
Sampson,
and obviously I'm devastated that that Soldo still hasn't got his 50th game because he's injured.
The banner's there, ready.
But the one good thing is I'm glad Sampson's going to get more shots at this, because there's plenty there.
Yeah. No. For me, he's a positive of the season. Well, as we saw in the preseason as well. When I mentioned about inconsistency of our young players, this is using the AFL Pressure Act stats. Judson Clark went from being our second best pressure player in the Bulldogs game to being, I think, our second worst. Yeah, second worst. Actually, no, equal worst. That's unfortunately sort of, like, you know, I really like Judson Clark. He's flashing some really tidy finishing skills. He covers the ground, but yeah, you just, and I'm sure the coaches are onto him. It's hard getting consistent footy out of younger players, particularly ones without mature bodies.
For what it's worth, other than the before-mentioned goal, which was absolutely gorgeous by him, and sort of, God's sake,
quite a bit of work.
Did my pick him, is he had 6 touches in the last quarter.
When he had 4 clearances as well.
Yeah, but there was a distinct when everyone else had stopped, he was still going.
Toronto had 7 in the quarter as well. I thought his work rate was, like, in terms of distance covered, was off the charts. He ran nearly 17 kilometres.
So I mentioned it briefly on that the notes we posted last week. The Toronto question is really interesting. He is so good on sort of a lot of the normal counting stats you'd look at a midfielder. And aside from all the ones that, you know, it's meters gained, score involvements, which is a really meaningful statistic. You know, his possessions are high, contested ball's okay. His centre square work is okay in a team. He's sort of...
His pressure is good.
Well, I was going to say, so in a team where our centre square... generally suck, he's the best of the lot, at least in getting the clearance. But he's third in the AFL by pressure acts, by the AFL measure. He's pressure super high. But I think he just cracks the top 100 in the AFL rankings, or maybe he's not even in that. Like, he's like continually bad in the ratings. And so why is that? Because they're objective measures, right? They're not things that...
It's not a perfect measure. And I do... And I'm sure his relative ranking in the best and fairest is better than what it is with the coaches, because I think we've traditionally really valued, you know, moving the play forward a contest. But... You know, the other part of it is our forward line's dysfunctional, unfortunately. Maybe part of that's delivery, but maybe it's forwards not giving guys a target and getting in front and winning contests. Like, you know, I haven't really missed George all that much in the season, but maybe thinking about it, we have missed a bit of that relentless contesting. Well, particularly when Lynch is out of the team.
Well, I also, like, we use our AFL rating a lot when it suits us, so, and there hasn't been much positive stuff to go on, so I have been analysing at least why, because I've never seen this before. So it's not that I'm making value judgment, I was interested about why that was happening. And
it is. It's notable.
It does agree. I'm agreeing with you. I
was just saying the AFL's de-emphasizing the player ratings. Like, they're not publishing them after games.
But they're doing that because they're hard to explain and people don't like them. But that doesn't mean they're not valid. Like, they're based on. The AFL statistic, the treatment of their public statistics is horrendous. Like, none of us go to the AFL site for most of their statistics right after game day. I don't think the AFL, I'm not using the AFL for the benchmark of what statistics have been, because the reason we started using them, because they were really good at highlighting all the value that people like Shane Edwards did, which it was hard to...
That's true. It loves itself at amid half forward. Ben Miller did great on the player ratings in round one. Like it does.
Well, I don't think it's a good round to round, mate. I think it's better for week to week. But I'm the thing is, Nick, I'm trying to agree with you, is because I was going through again why this might be the case, because I've never seen this before. And the thing about AFL ratings is it really rates players who hit other people on space in uncontested possessions. So the reason it does, the reason someone like Jaden Short does better on traditional ratings, sorry, this is quite esoteric, but
and also the AFL doesn't publish how the ratings done as well.
Oh, they do it. So I've actually pulled out the there's a four pager on it. So I've been looking through it again to work out why this is the case. Yeah, I know it's not easy to find. None of this is, and this is getting very esoteric, but the difference is, and so we can dismiss it all if we want, and, you know, there are plenty
of... not dismissing it. Toronto, I think there's an element of Toronto not having easy targets to kick to as well.
Which is actually what I worked out. So I'm agreeing with you.
We just took a torturous way of getting there.
Yeah. So if you look at... So Jaden Short bangs the ball down the line 70 metres to a Tom Lynch contested mark. Looks great on contested data ranking, plenty of metres gained. AFL ratings doesn't like it as much because they rate much higher if you kick it to a player in attacking position, because it used geocoding as well, who's uncontested. So that's why it loves people like Shane Edwards, because they're precision disposal people. And it's, as far as I can tell, and this is just a speculation, but this is why there's this weird why there's quite a range of opinions on Tim Taranto, is that he's not getting the ball to uncontested forwards in space. And why that is, after five games, could be for a lot of reasons, including the one you're saying. And that's sort of what I came to about why you've got this unusual disparity, which I've never seen before in a Richmond midfielder. Now, admittedly, I don't follow other teams as closely. Their statistical thing. But just one to watch with Taranto, this is why this disparity. And, you know, I think your theory is as good as the one it was similar to the one I came up with. But I don't want to dismiss AFL ratings, because Lord knows I'm going to use it next time it says a player's good that I like.
Yeah, I'm honestly using it because it's now so hard to find. I'm using it less.
Like, yeah, one obscure site
you can
I found.
Custom,
thank God.
Yeah, you can custom. There's 20 different stats on the AFL app on your phone that you can customize to track. So, but yeah, AFL rating is not one of them. Anyway, Taranto going well, not great. Dion Presti is really not playing as well as he did last year.
No, by the way, no, he's not. He's no. In fact, watching the highlights, the center square part. Here's the funny thing about Richmond and why I don't have hot takes other than when I have to defend. Sorry, I put myself on mute there. This is why I don't have strong hot takes on the midfield, because aside from the AFL ratings thing, I know you're not one of them, but too many people dismiss them because they don't understand them. So it's a pet hobby horse of mine. But the midfield entirely, like, all the takes are weird, right? Like, Hopper's not getting it done in the clearances, but his AFL ratings are really good because his ball movement's quite good, which isn't his MO. And Prestia's really seems to be the weakest link at the moment. And that's not kind of the story that was, you know, it's all about Cochin and the new guys. But that may be the sort of the problem at the moment. I don't know.
When you Prestia non-substituted games year on year comparison. Yeah, it's a pretty big drop. It's about 7 disposals a game, which, yeah, it's not great.
No, it's and they talked about resting him this week. He has been named an extended bench, but I wonder if he's got an unannounced injury.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's a, you know, he's got a obviously a lengthy
story checks out
injury history. Yeah, you wonder. I mean, story checks out. Yeah, you wonder if Cochin's fresh and feeling good. If they give him a rest, Noah Cumberland enjoying his work.
Yeah, so obviously playing well on the offensive end. Richo mentioned it in the official pod, but his pressure has been quite good. Like, it's the problem with a lot of these pressure stats is they're quite. Like, tackles inside 50 is a very high variance stat. But you don't get many of them. So, you get 2 and suddenly you're in the top 10 in the AFL per week. But, yeah, he is quite good on those measures. So, there's evidence to back up the supporting work. And he's just, like, as previously discussed, he's a live wire in the forward line.
Yeah. And he had... all but one of his disposals in the forward 50. He's really playing as a pure forward. Eight tackles as well as the pressure aches. He's exciting. Tyler Sonsi's, he hasn't quite got to his better games from last year.
Well, he's playing like a second-year midfielder that didn't have much of a preseason.
Yeah, which is annoying, but true.
I thought...
But all the skills still there, obviously.
Yeah, and if he was... If we didn't have such high expectations from late last year, like, the quick hands are still there. He gets the, I've got to stop doing this, but he had a few shedder-like hand passes. Shane Edwards, of course, invented the hand pass at Richmond, and no one was good at it before he ever came to the club. there's the inside skills are there. It's just he's just not big enough or fit enough to go to solve our centre square problems at the moment.
No. But, I like having him around. Noah Bolter's statistical profile is... pretty impressive. 10th in contested marks per game, 14th in intercepts, 14th in rebound 50s.
So stick with me here about this. So great, and they're all good measures, but speaking of obscure statistical measures, this is an exciting podcast. Tyler Young... Mm. If you look at the top 10 in AFL players who have had the most defensive one-on-one contests, that makes sense. So getting isolated one out the most in the AFL, Tyler's he's in top 10 in the AFL for moments he's had like that, and he's also top 10 in the AFL for win rate.
We are not. We are not afraid of matchups with him.
In fact, he's second in the AFL, only to Tom McCartan.
There we go.
It's a funny list. I will say, like,
It is a funny list. It means teams are not kicking the ball away from him, but also I think it's a sign of trust as well.
I mean, the win rate's really... I mean, he's playing against completely different opponents, but his win rate's sort of, like, exponentially better than Bolter's.
Yeah. Now, but Bolter's obviously getting the harder.
Yeah, obviously it wouldn't be as good if he was playing against Mackay in the Carlton game. But, it's not a junk stat. There is enough ball going towards him that there's proof of concept.
No, it's quite reassuring. I like having him in the team. It is funny. What did you think of Hugo's game?
Not a strong take. I don't know. Is there? Are you raising that because you sort of something stood out to you?
Oh, look, I'd probably a couple of weeks ago was his best game, but yeah, I think he's settling into senior football, which I'm enjoying.
Yeah, look, I agree, and you just got to keep playing him, right? Because what are you going to get from this season? Like, the only way, you know, the season's not over. We might still win some really meaningful football, but it's got to come from improvement from some of the guys like him.
Mm. Yep. Maybe to finish off, but I can't believe we haven't talked about the other ruckman yet.
He was quite good. Lots of the ball.
Yeah.
The inside 50 mark he gave up, though, to a much smaller opponent was did make me have podcast flashbacks that we have. It was like maybe one of these things where it was a funny ball drop, but if it hadn't been a player that sort of had the slight history of doing that, I wouldn't have noticed. But yeah, I did notice because he's had a history.
Yeah. And once you notice it, you can't not notice it. No, I think I'd be quite happy for a Sampstow rough combination in a few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. He won heaps of hitouts, by the way.
Hmm. Yeah, and look, his possession rate was pretty high and shot around the ground. You always it's really valuable having functional backup big men on your rookie list. But you don't want to rely on them too much, I think, is the Ben Miller story.
Mm. We should mention, I mentioned it in passing in the ratings, like Topper, but it was by far his best game at the club, statistically, 32 touches, 5 clearances.
Yeah, just trying to think. His Adelaide game was pretty good.
Well, you kept talking, and I'll check that. But
wasn't as good as that.
You've already looked it up.
I'm remembering how good his first half was.
But as I said, he's gross. he's the best of the mids on the AFL rating. So I'm going to die on this hill, Nick. That I'm going to keep using the stat, and I legitimately, the fact that the AFL doesn't like to use it makes me like it more. And Baker had 35, which we need to keep recognising that he's in Richmond Tiger talk.
No,
we don't talk about the best players.
But yeah, he's clearly having a career season. Going really well.
Anyway, my Tim Taranto Brownlow bet's not looking so good because, I think Papley will take 5 votes from this game. We'll get the 3-2-1 from the Brownlow in this game.
I know, frustrating.
Moving on.
We could have a very short discussion about the
VFL list of players and the VFL.
Yeah, the AFL list of players in the VFL.
That's what I meant. Like, there's nothing to talk about, right? That's just, our VFL players are really the only thing to discuss. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Oh, look, there's a couple of interesting positional things. Jacob Bauer's been moved to the back line. We don't have any functional depth either at key forward or key back at the moment. We've got so many injuries, so But the knock we've talked about on him is he's very marking dependent, but since moving to the back line, he is winning quite a bit more football. And he's played as a junior as a backman some of the time as well. But yeah, he's playing pretty well there. Steely Green, they played as a small forward, because again we don't have any small forwards at the moment. Didn't get the ball a ton. Sort of did a good job with pressure, but I think I was slightly disappointed Sam Banks was an emergency this week, because yeah, he was pretty good, but it is. You look at our injury list and you think, there's part of you thinks, Robbie Tarrant, older guy, is always a bit prone to injury, but we've got Caleb Smith, Seth Campbell, Kalen Bradkey from this year's draft group, Tom Brown and Josh Gibkiss from the year before, Jack Graham and Jaden Short, who were in their mid-20s, as well as some of the older guys. It's the whole list getting injured. it's frustrating.
So the Jaden Short thing. One of the things I neglected to mention in my depressing analysis of what's going wrong is we are turning the ball over at an AFL leading rate to transitioning from defence. Mm. I can't help but feel, and you know, the as we mentioned on the notes, like Vossie's turning over the ball a lot statistically, but I can't help but feel that at least some of that is not having Jaden Short's run and carry from the back line, that he's always there for the release hand pass, and then he can thump it long. Like, it's not always precision, but he gets it long and far out of the back line to at least the contest. And I can't, you know, maybe this has been oversimplified, but I do wonder whether his absence is sort of one of the big reasons why, you know, the defensive transition has been, you know, the worst in winning memory, I suppose you'd say.
Yeah, there's definitely the team isn't fitting together very well. Like, I think the defence, we talked about the defence missing Nathan Broad's versatility, and I think if Gibkiss was playing, that'd be less of an issue. Obviously, we've got a lot less grunt around the football with both rucks, both the first two rucks injured.
When Tim was talking about the problems the team have, and obviously he can't, despite what's been said in the media, Tim is generally excellent over his whole career after losses.
Mm.
He was surprisingly vague when he was sort of what's going wrong, and he talked about connectiveness and teammates gelling with each other. Like, he's more generally more analytical than that. He'll normally speak to a specific thing. There's pieces you can pick apart that where you can point to, like we just did, but there is just a sort of a general, just feels like something's less than the sum of its parts right now. Something's just not clicking.
Yep.
And that's sort of what I'm not doing justice to what Dimmer said, but that's kind of what he said, and I can't remember the last time I've heard him say something like that.
I know, and it is, you know, we're having these really, both really good and really bad quarters. Like, such a rollercoaster team at the moment. It is.
And sort of these long quarters have been unable to score. Full quarters been unable to score.
And then a sudden burst, and then we go back to not scoring again. Right.
I must admit, I was shocked by the last 5 minutes. Maybe it's sort of atypical because it's end of a game. There's been a few injuries on both sides, but yeah, that last second just onslaught it's not what I was not expecting that by the flow of the game. Like, I didn't think we were going to win, but yeah, it was. I kind of can't explain it. Anyway, that's the that's not particularly analytical. We could go back to discussing AFL stats or AFL ratings, or we could talk about Melbourne, which is perhaps not the...
Well, look, I wanted two quick things. The Port Melbourne in the VFLW, you've got a few of our players are going all right. Steph Williams and Stella Reid both played well and kicked goals on the weekend, which is very good in a post-Courtney Wakefield world. And Charlie Nash got selected in the 40-man squad for the Vic Metro trials coming up, and he wasn't in the squad pre-season, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, it is good. It's a good sign. So yeah, progress there. Chris Egan, number one, by the way. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Was that Sophie Mullen's old number?
Yes.
Yeah. So they've just gone as commented on previously, despite the fact they have nothing in common in footballers other than the red hair, they are frequently confused by themselves on the call. And yeah.
So Melbourne are 3-2, whilst also being one of the premiership favourites. And I think what's most worrying is that they beat the Swans by 50 points three weeks ago, and Max Gawn might be coming back from injury, and Brodie Grundy's been playing really well.
And yes, and Brodie Grundy has given Nank trouble in the past, but that's not an issue. But Gawn, he still might not play. During the week, they were saying that he'll do his best, but he's still not guaranteed. But the Richmond fatalism would have us have it that he will play. And guess whose midfield kicks ass on the AFL ratings, Nick?
Yeah.
Olivia and Petrarca are just—they're the absolute shiz, and they're great in the centre square. And it feels like that it'll be that their strength against our weakness. Well, not—I don't know. Like, it's hard. That's unfair. I don't know what exactly our weakness is, but obviously it's an extreme strength of theirs. We saw what happened.
Yes, although you would think Clayton Oliver, great, Petrarca, excellent. The big boys in the ruck. Surely, given those guys, they should be better than 15th in clearance differential.
What are they on centre clearance? That's my current hobby horse. We're not as bad on clearance as overall, by the way. Anyway,
no.
Keep talking while I look that up.
Yeah, I don't know, but that I was very surprised by that because they are
I agree. Yeah.
Leading scoring team in the league, first in tackles, first in goal assists. They win a lot more disposals than the other team. They've been kicking for goal really accurately, which I think is partly a quality of the shots that they're generated. And yet, they have been inconsistent in clearance and maybe just inconsistent overall. Like, they weren't lost to the Bombers by 27 points, lost to the Lions up at the Gabba. Yeah, it's been a funny season for them.
Yeah, and look, it's been a funny 2 years for them, right?
Well, true. After the Asterix premiership.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I'm sure their fans would love to actually see a premiership. So yes, they are. They're pretty decent at centre square clearances, but they've got a very weird negative differential. They're almost the mirror image of us because we're positive on round the ground clearances, as previously discussed, abysmal in centre square. Obviously, centre square clearances are very different and more consequential, but there are a lot more clearances around the ground. Interesting. But they are a funny team. I'm desperately... I mean, we're 22-point underdogs last time I heard, but I don't know if there's been a move. That almost seems a bit much, but like let's face it, that's pretty big underdogs for us. And yeah,
yep.
What's your case for optimism? Are you on pause, or is that just? Are you on mute, or is that just a long pause?
I was in thoughtful reflection. Look, I am already in the reptilian stage of my brain, and probably still traumatized by the preseason game. Yeah. They have got a few players. They have got a few players out, and the forward line is still really inconsistent. As well, now that there's sort of a strength in having a variety of targets, but there is, they haven't really got a bang it down somebody's throat target when the play slows down. Levers out, which sort of is one of the key intercepting players. Trent Rivers is having a really good season, actually, and yeah, I think Lockie Hunter complements the inside balls pretty well as well. I don't know. When they're good, they look really good, and we and this inconsistent version of Richmond is going to struggle Melbourne at anything close to their best, but. Yeah, I do. You know, we were the top scoring team in the AFL last year, and we've got most of the same players available, with the very big exception of Tom Lynch. So, yeah, I feel like we can definitely play better, and Melbourne are still not where they'd quite like to be as well. But yeah, it's. It could be a tough night at the office.
Could be. I'm often struck watching them. Why aren't they better on a week-to-week basis? Because they feel like, I know I said this about the Bulldogs as well, but they're the two teams that really stand out to me that have, like, just on paper, they look amazing, right? And, of course, the preseason game. So I'm really nervous that it could be a tough night at the office, just to quote you. But I liked your take about the... like sometimes it's hard to quantify, and Richmond are, by the way, Melbourne are by far the best team in the AFL in meters gained respective to their opposition, and yet aren't very good at inside 50s.
Yeah, their stat line is just weird.
So like there's still upside case there, right? And I'm really excited to see Samson Ryan against Grundy. I'm just going to presume Gorn's out because I need to sleep at night. but look, there's lots of opportunity there. Jack Ross is coming back in for his traditional three-goal game swing before he gets dropped again. Well, actually, that's not fair. It's not the full team yet. But like the... it'll be a younger team, and it'll be interesting.
Bauer's been named on an extended bench, but I feel that's...
That wasn't his first emergency naming, was it?
No, it wasn't. No.
No, so it's a bit...
The week before.
So it might be really interesting, but I think it's a bit of... We unfortunately are recording on Thursday.
I don't think he's a million miles away, but I also think that's a strong function of the catastrophic injury list.
Yeah, indeed. And it'd be really interesting to see what they do with Maurice Rioli too, who didn't have the best of games, but were desperate for
creativity. He's having, last year was technically his second year, but he's had a tougher goal this season.
Yeah, he's having the sophomore blues. And there was a moment against the Swans, which you've probably forgotten, but where Mansell...
repressed.
He fell for the most obvious balk, with the sort of the over-eager desperation that gave me yet another Steve Morris flashback. Sorry. Anyway, on that note, but yeah, there's hope, and you know, I'll watch it. But it's certainly a different feeling going into a game.
I know our schedule is not fun. The start of the season. I'm looking forward both to getting some more players back and a slightly friendlier part of the draw.
Indeed.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.